This is Tiger Woods, and welcome to another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone. I have here with me, as usual, Amelia. Amelia, welcome. And I want you to tell us all where you're at. I know where you're at this week. You're on site. Just tell us about what's going on with you right now, and let's focus on you and what you have going on in, I'll spill it, in Augusta?
Yes, it is in Augusta, Georgia. That is where I am. Not playing Augusta National yet, but at the nearby course, Champions Retreat. And we just finished, I just finished my first round of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Played well today. Actually played my first round under par at Champions Retreat, which is the course we play before we play Augusta National. So that felt good. Shot one under. My fiance Charlie was on the bag. It was a great day. My mom was out watching. My coach was there. The course is hard as ever, but luckily hit some wedges close, made a string of birdies towards the end, so that was nice. But it was a great day. Even though it's not Augusta National, there's still so many people out. The 18th green was crowded with a few hundred people, so that was really special. But it's a really cool tournament. All the media that ANWA has put out for us and what they've done so far has just been really cool. So I'm just kind of enjoying the day, and we're going to have an early dinner, go to bed, and get ready for tomorrow.
Yeah, it's super cool talking to you today as you just finished your round. One under, yeah, you're sitting in really good position. You're T7 right now, and yeah, the back nine was pretty fun to watch in the office. We were kind of keeping up where you were, and a flurry of birdies on 12, 13, and 14 there had to feel really good. So, yeah, it was a really solid round. It looked like scores were tough. So there's just a few of you guys that got under par in for the day. So super great round and in good position.
Yeah, it's crazy with this field too. One stroke can move you 10 spots up the leaderboard or 10 spots back. So it makes it for really dramatic play. But I was actually re-listening to our guests that are going to be on just in a couple of minutes once we stop rambling. but talking to these guys, it was just legendary. I mean, being able to really listen to the podcast as a listener rather than an interviewer. We were just talking about this and getting to hear the incredible stories. And you guys are going to love it. It's pretty iconic. This, you can't get much better than this.
Right.
And we didn't do much work. It was them. Just, we kind of sat back and let them take the reins. So it was really special. Fred and Tiger, those are our guests. Can't really get any better than that. So
yeah, what's great for the listeners is we didn't talk very much. Tiger,
no,
and
we didn't.
Fred,
we didn't
really
need to.
Yeah, really talked a lot. And, you know, obviously those two get around each other. It's funny when we get at the shoots, commercial shoots or digital shoots, like you got to kind of separate those guys because they'll get in the corner and they'll start talking and we'll be like, guys, we need you over here on set, and you got to separate them sometimes. So this was an instance where we just sat back and loved to hear them kind of keep talking, and they had some great stories which you guys will hear about President's Cup, about using the Bridgestone ball for the first time. There's a really good story from Tiger about that kind of centers around the Tiger Slam, just to tease that one a little bit. But let's just get right into it and let's bring these guys on. All right, listeners, without further ado, we're super excited about our next two guests. Yep, you heard that right, two guests. Our next two guys have been former number ones in the world, over 150 professional wins, 16 majors, 4 player championships, and they both are in the Golf World Hall of Fame. I'd like to welcome Fred Couples and Tiger Woods.
And partners in the Ryder Cup, President's Cup.
President's Cup.
No, partners.
Yes.
love it.
All right, let's get straight to this relationship. We're gonna start with Fred. Kind of talk about how this relationship, the genesis of the relationship between you and Tiger, and how it started. Maybe you saw him for the first time as a young kid on tour, and kind of what you thought.
Well, actually, I saw him on TV a few times, and then I don't know the years, but the first time we really met was in
95, Masters.
Well, didn't we play before that in Singapore?
No, Thailand.
Or Thailand?
Thailand, Phuket.
Yeah, so we played a practice round together, and then we played at Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
And if people know me, I follow greatness because I enjoy it in whatever sport it is. And so I had such a good time playing with him. My teacher, Paul Marchand, who's been my teacher for 43 years, was watching too. And we went back and, you know, we just talked about Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. And then it took me a while to really get to know him. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw him. I was invited to his tournament a few times and we had dinner a couple times. But to be honest, outside of like a Ryder Cup or President's Cup, we've maybe only gone to dinner a handful of times, mm-hmm. but we wear each other out in other ways.
Oh boy, did we ever.
What does that look like? Can you elaborate?
Well, it looks like he wins every battle.
Well, first of all, I got you pretty good at getting the bill at my event.
Oh, God.
I got you really good at that one. Yeah. That was a good get.
Yes, that was dealing with wine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was a wine bet, and by the way, he had to pay, and I made sure that his credit cards weren't accepted.
And I didn't have enough cash. Yeah. And then I started really panicking, which is what's going on here, because the bottles were like Chateau something and Harland and all this great wine, and smart aleck here really got me.
any other great stories where you guys pranked each other? Fred, you had a great story. I believe it was for
the President's Cup. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. So,
Memorial.
Not so much pranking, but a lot of fun.
That was a prank, though.
No, the prank, the prank was, if we go through it real quick, that at the President's Cup in San Francisco, in case of an illness or an injury, you put someone's name in an envelope. And so I did not put Tiger's name in there. But the tour official will always come in and they'll hand it to you. I don't know why they do that, but they mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. And so I said, hey, don't give it to me. Just open it up and read it yourself. And it was sealed. Somehow Jay was in on this. And he read it and he showed everyone Tiger Woods. And they all flipped out. Absolutely. So I don't think I told you for months and months and months.
It was over half a year.
Yeah. So, and kept finally it going. I said, hey, by the way, I don't want you thinking I'm the dumbest guy in the room, but I was just teasing you. So that was a good one.
That was a great one.
That's it's always fun to hear kind of the insights of just people who have really good relationships with each other. What is the best memory that you have when you guys were partners, like particular shot, or what's kind of the dynamic between the two of you?
Oh, hold on. First
of all,
let me set this up. So,
all right.
We're playing against the two biggies on the international team in Australia, Melbourne. So we got to handle Vijay and Ernie. And so we go out there together and we just put a whooping on them. It was good stuff.
Yeah. 7-5.
Yes.
Oh.
That was
so
awesome.
So then the next day we got Craig Perry and Shigeki Maruyama. So I've always said this, when you're playing with Tiger, a lot of people look at his record in the President's Cup and Ryder Cup. We all know his record. It's the other people playing with him. And so I did get him a point, and then the second day I literally couldn't make a putt from 2.5 feet. So the first day everything went well.
Yeah, yeah.
He's stiffing it, and I'm making putts, and we're rolling. The second day, I just really felt the pressure, and I know the we were winning, and the pressure.
We were, but it got to the last hole, and then, they hole right. one from off the green like 50 yards, and they're going crazy, and it's like, man. but what made it worse was Jack was our captain.
Right.
And so it's like, you got to hear it from Jack.
Oh, you
know?
Got to hear it from him, right?
Did you guys like to go first? Were you, hey, captain, whatever, you want to put me, that's where I'll go? Anchor match.
Well, he played with O'Meara a lot and Steve Stricker a lot, but this is a long...
And Furyk.
Yep. And so I got him because, really, we wanted to play together,
mm-hmm.
and we did. And I think we also played one time in D.C., one round, and we lost.
We got beat pretty good.
We got beat there. Yeah. But I don't think, for me, it's ever mattered whether it's mm-hmm. first or last. You know, the pressure of making a 5-foot putt if you're the first match... or the fifth match, it really is irrelevant for me. You know, he makes them all the time.
But all the points count the same, whether your first match out or last match out. It's still, you're only in charge of 1 point. So whether you're first or last or somewhere in the middle, it's irrelevant. You're in charge of 1 point only, and you got to go get that point for your team. And I was lucky enough to have, as I said earlier, is that I got a chance to play with Fred. I got a chance to make 3 winning putts for Fred as my captain, and then he got to be my vice captain. Which was awesome in Australia, and it was just our whole relationship has come around from a punk kid on tour who needed a big brother, and he was there to being partners to then
being under him and winning cups for him. And then all of a sudden I say, hey, dude, now I need your help. Can you help me in Australia be my vice captain? And it's come.
How was that dynamic of, obviously, Fred has had amazing success at the President's Cup and you got the captain. What did you do? Did you lean on him for a lot?
Absolutely. I mean, you've never seen a person. I mean, if you watch the President's Cups, when we do the pairings on the table, because the Ryder Cup is, it's whatever it is. You know, you hand them in four in a row and just pair them together. Whatever, that's easy. But the President's Cup, there's a lot of strategy that goes involved in it. And you should see how good this guy is. There's, five matches going out, and we don't know what they're going to throw out at us, right? So you'll see Fred write stuff down, and he'll write the pairings that he thinks they're going to throw out. And not only does he do that, he'll put down the order in which they're going to go out, and I'm telling you, he gets 4 out of 5 right. Nice. It is ridiculous how good he is at that. And, you see him we see us on the table laughing, and you see him laughing and all the other vice captains laughing, and then he'll announce, or I had to announce as captain. But you don't realize that we're all laughing because he's getting them right.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people thought we were laughing at the international.
No,
but it is comical. But one of the things I'll say, we were just talking about Hunter, my stepson, and Charlie and Sam, mm-hmm. how much homework they have. And all these things that I've ever done, the most time I really study is the night before, and I just sit there and have fun with it. Normally I pay no attention, because in the President's Cup, it's kind of easy to get the guys to go out. And again, in Australia, I had fun watching Tiger, because so many people, and one quick story is, Tiger took Saturday morning off, mm-hmm. and the team was, holding their own, doing okay. And then I don't usually wear earphones, because I hate that. So I'm wearing them, and Tiger says, I'm going to take the afternoon off too.
And by the way, it goes quiet for the longest period of time. And, I get, hey, guys, I just think it's best for the team that I sit out in the afternoon, and I'm going to take the afternoon off. Right. And it's literally like that. There's silence for forever. And Fred's, you can't get in there to warm up.
I didn't know what to say.
And did you want to say?
Well, I wanted to say, and then he said a few more things after it was quiet, like, I believe in the team, get it done. And then the next day, he went out and won a singles match, which was huge.
Yes, that was a huge point. I remember that. You guys have both been number ones in the world. I mean, that's been a feat. There's not a lot of people that have been. We had Jason Day a little bit earlier. And
that are friends that are both have been number one.
Yeah, exactly. What was it like when you guys hit number one in the world first, and to kind of keep that going? Fred, we'll start with you.
Well, for me, it was real quick. I won a few tournaments. I got to number one. I'm not sure how long it lasted. I don't know if it was 15 weeks. For some reason, that rings a bell. But the reason that I pay a lot of attention to Tiger is because of the way he plays. And so I personally have had some nice runs in a real tight span of 6 or 8 years, and then I won a tournament here and won a tournament there. But, when you watch him, he's going to tell you in a second how long or when he was number one, but he did it over and over and over, and I honestly don't think anyone really got close to him for several years.
That feels like one that will never get broken. Tiger, talk about when you got the number one, and was it a goal, or were you just like one of those things where it's going to happen on its own if I play well?
It happened so quickly for me, because I turned pro right after I won the amateur in 96, and quickly I won 2 tournaments. I beat Davis in a playoff, and I beat Payne Stewart head-to-head at Disney, and within 7 tournaments, I'm in the Tour Championship, and those 2 wins, plus the Tour Championship, the 2 wins got me into the tournament champions. Was at La Casa, was the first event out, right. And then I beat Lehman in a playoff, and then I won the Masters, and then I won the Byron Nelson, when I came back after 4 weeks, and it was like boom, 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 and all of a sudden I'm ranked number one in the world, and it's like, whoa, what just happened here? And right now I should be a junior in college. It just happened so quickly that, I didn't really realize what I had accomplished.
Right.
It was just like, that was the beginning of what they call Tiger Mania and all that kind of stuff that started happening, and I was just like, whoa, slow down. What just happened here? And it happened so fast. It was just a blur to me at that time. I didn't really enjoy it because it was just so quickly. All my friends were in college. Mm-hmm. I had no contemporaries that were out with me on the tour.
Right.
The youngest guy was with Justin Leonard on tour. Mm-hmm. And he'd won the British Open at Troon that year, 97, that I won. So it was like, but Justin was still ahead of me by 3 years. And so I had no one like my age that was on tour right. for another few more years.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, I lost it for a little bit in 98 and beginning of 99, I started piecing it back together again. And then all my friends got out there. And I remember Noda got on tour. He won two tournaments in 99, won two tournaments in 2000. All of a sudden, boom, we're first off leading the President's Cup at, RTJ. So that was one of the coolest things that a person I grew up with find his own tour. But not only that, we're both minorities and we're leading our U.S. team in a President's Cup. So that's when I started to, you know, really enjoy that, you know, being on tour and, you know, being around him all these years too.
Tell him real quick, because when you beat Lehman, this story is, it's not incredible because he does it, but it rained and we only played 54 holes or two rounds. But so tell them what happened.
They canceled Saturday, and then Sunday the golf course was unplayable. It was Lake La Costa at the time, so it was just all underwater. And the only hole they could play was at that time the 16th hole was the par three, as literally the only hole that was playable.
Right.
So I had birdied the last hole to get to tied for the lead on Friday. Next thing you know, we're teeing up on Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was Lehman and Lehman kind of tugged one a little bit, rode the wind, and knocked in the water. And I had to go second, and I, you know, stiffed it.
It had a couple feet,
but, you know, right.
I mean. It's just kind of a cool way to get your third, fourth win.
Bridgestone shot in the dark. Right. That's one that's always stuck with me, that Bridgestone shot and the bulbs flashing.
Yeah, that was pretty cool because Hal Sutton, I was going to win the golf tournament. I was already leading by 10 or more shots at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So they came to us on a 16th hole. Hey, do you want to finish today or do you want to come back? And Hal just immediately says, we're getting it done. He didn't want to play with me anymore. You know, the tournament was already over. He didn't want to come back, sleep over it, and come back and finish second or whatever he finished. And he's like, we're getting this done. I'm like, okay, here we go. So, you know, we race and, you know, you see guys, you know, tee off twice on 18 race down the fairway. And we didn't see it. We hit our tee shots. No one had a clue where they were. And we're asking the boom mic guys, you know, hey, where's our golf ball? Okay, I'm in the fairway. Hal, you're in the fairway. And then all of a sudden I hit that 7-iron in there. Sorry, 9-iron in there to, I don't know, 3 feet or whatever it was. But TV doesn't do it justice because, you know, the irises are fully opened. It's darker than dark. I can't see the flagstick. So I lined up the flagstick based on that tall tree.
The tree, right?
There's a tree. I know it's just a little bit right of the tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's crazy, too. Just when it gets a little bit dark, it's so hard to see, even, you know, around 5:30. So, like, you can't even imagine. It gets even more darker than that. You really can't see anything.
No, you can't see anything. And then, but, you know, you say flash bulbs, and this is just at the beginning of, you know, cell phones, right? You know, so people have still had the disposable cameras and all of the different things, and you can hear those going off, and they hear them clicking, zip, 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 click, zip, 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 click, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Fred, tell us about your first experience with Bridgestone Golf, just whether testing the balls or putting in play for the first time.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, and I did some ball testing in Atlanta, and it took maybe 3 or 4 holes is all. And so for me, the most important thing would be A, length, and the Bridgestone was going as far or further every single time. And then it would be how fast it stopped. And so then I went and hit some 7-irons and then some wedges. And of course, you know where your ball mark is and you know what's happening. And so it was a pretty good fit. And one of the best fits is how really hard Bridgestone works on a golf ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was a Maxfly guy, which is a company that was around forever. But Bridgestone, everyone knew about a couple different balls, Precept. Mm-hmm. And they all knew how great they were. And so when I got on, I mean, I've never had a problem, and I think it's been 23 years or 22 years at least. And so there's never been a bad ball. And a lot of times I'll text Tiger, and I'll say, what are you using and why do you like it? And we have used a little bit different of a ball.
Not much so.
No. And he wants to hit every 5-iron 202. You know, I don't mind if they go a little further or shorter, but I can't have the 10 yards difference. Yeah. And so when I didn't compress the other ball, it didn't go as far as I got older. When I was, you know, late 40s, early 50s, I could still hammer it. But now I use a ball that I think Charlie's using.
Correct.
It's a Correct.
Yeah, I use the RXS, actually. You're really nice there we go.
So, and it's great. And I'm 63, and I can hit it further. Yeah. And I don't carry it as far. But for me, the most important yardages on our tour is probably, well, really wedges is everywhere, but 140 to 180. Mm-hmm. And I can handle all those shots mm-hmm. with this ball. Mm-hmm. It's not like a rock. I mean, I absolutely love the ball.
Tiger, what about you? First experience with Bridgestone?
Well, my first experience with Bridgestone is when we ended the wound ball technology back in 2000. So I had started testing in early 2000 and ended up putting a Bridgestone-made ball in play back then. And it was at Memorial, and I did well there. And then all of a sudden, I kind of won the U.S. Open by 15, and I kind of did well. I won the British Open by 8, and so and then I won the PGA. So I'm like, okay, well, I won 3 majors in a row with a Bridgestone-made ball. So, and I've played Bridgestone-made balls ever since.
One thing I want to ask you both, is there an aspect of the other person's game that you'd want to steal from them or kind of take from them? Like, Tiger's, is something that you'd love to be able to pull off that Fred can pull off?
No. Okay. Well, here's the deal. Not, I can hit every shot Fred can hit. Okay. That's not the problem.
I'm giving him some,
justice. No, I'm just saying that I can. But I don't have a cool walk like he does.
Oh, okay.
No, but seriously, we know. We all, everyone knows his walk from a mile away. It's one of a kind. Yes. He makes it look so cool. I mean, it's the coolest thing ever. Like Rob and I were driving up here today, and we're like a hole away, and you see Fred. I said, "There's Fred."
Yeah.
One of a kind.
To be known
Do you
for
agree
that?
With that?
One of a kind.
Did you say you have a pretty unique walk?
He makes it look cool.
I don't wear a glove, which some people attest that both hands are swinging, and but yeah, I just walk, and getting back to what I like is I text him a lot, and my caddy now works for him. And my caddy worked for me for over 20 years. So he's seen a lot. And so when I talk to Joe a little bit, you know, I just, there's not even a word for a lot of golfers being clutch. Someone clutch does this or that. But there's someone who, you know, is he going to make this putt? Is a Valhalla against
Bob May,
a little 8-footer.
Oh,
you know,
God,
I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Against Rocco, it's a 20-footer. But most 4 and 5 footers, no one's done that. And I know there's stats and there are all kinds of things, but I only know one thing about Tiger is that I don't think he's clutch. I just think he's amazing on how clutch he is. So there's a little bit of a difference. Like if a guy wins and he birdies 3 of the last 5 holes to win the tournament, that's pretty clutch. But when you're, and it's not that he's won 80-something times. It's just that in my time, I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. Sam Snead, everyone loved his swing. Jack Nicklaus, everyone loves Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus's and Tiger are going to battle for the greatest player, in my opinion. It's Tiger, and someone else may say Jack. But it's how they do it. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, I've played practice rounds with him before, and I know this for a fact. And we walked off the 17th green. He made about a 10-footer for par on this par 3 where Jim Furyk won. And he goes, "Stevie, no bogeys yet." Mm-hmm. And I'm walking with Joe, and I'm saying, "What did he just say?" And actually, he playing the practice round in a major, and we're all screwing around, but he makes his putt and says, "No bogeys today." And so I just find that all of who he is.
Yeah.
You know, like I play practice rounds, and most of the time, on purpose try and hit it bad just to get people laughing. Because I know in the tournament you're going to bear down, you're going to play, but he's out there playing and he want him on your team, you want him as your partner, you want him to be around you, and I've been lucky enough.
I mean, we could talk to you guys all day. Thanks for stopping in and chatting
Absolutely.
Us a little bit. What a great combo. And
thanks for having us.
A great day.
Yeah,
yes,
thank you so much.
Thanks. All right.
Adam, I truly think we could have listened to Fred and Tiger for the next couple hours on end. That was so special and unique and
I hated
iconic.
We had to end it.
I know. I was so sad. It was just fascinating to hear them recount their stories together, and that we really could just sit back and listen to to them talk. And one thing I found really interesting, because we all see Tiger and think of him as a machine, which he obviously is on the golf side.
Right.
But when he talked about becoming number one in the world and how it was actually quite an adjustment for him because he was still a college kid, and here he was number one in the world. He had no one his age. And then to contrast that kind of struggle a little bit, sort of social struggle, with then Fred coming in and really being a mentor, being a guide. They talked about, Tiger talked about Fred being a big brother. Just really, really cool that, you know, Fred really stepped in, and they just have such a great relationship.
I know. What a full circle their relationship has come to now, as Fred kind of heads towards the back nine of his career on the Champions, PGA Champions Tour, and he's still playing great golf. But Tiger talking about their kind of time together over the years as his President's Cup was really cool, because you get to see the whole evolution of how they played together, and they talked about playing Vijay and Ernie and how they beat those guys and played together. And then Tiger mentioned how he got the winning point for Fred at a President's Cup, as Fred was the captain. And then more recently, Tiger was the captain and Fred got to be his assistant captain. So, I mean, just the generational move of, you know, Tiger being the young guy to Tiger being the captain and Fred helping him on this journey of winning the President's Cup just a few years ago was really cool hearing how special that was. And you know, these guys on the borderline giggling with each other talking about those President's Cup stories. So really amazing. But also from a Bridgestone perspective, for crying out loud, him talking about the golf ball and using it and working with our engineers in 1999, converting to the ball in 2000, and then obviously going on a just ridiculous run of winning not only tournaments but majors. You know, no one's ever done it since, holding all four majors at one time. And him kind of discussing the end of the wound ball era, you know, is really cool. And that always gets my juices flowing when he talks about the technology of the ball. And he's kind of that way as well. And he loves talking about the evolution of the ball and what's really come for him over the years. And, you know, making his way out from 97, winning the Masters for the first time, to winning the Masters again in 2019. So it's really cool to hear him talk about the evolution of the golf ball and kind of where it goes. But all the stuff the guys talked about was amazing. And again, like you said earlier at the beginning, just listening to it again is amazing. You know, this podcast that we recorded not too long ago, just hearing them kind of talk to each other and the friendship those guys have with each other is just so apparent.
Yeah, I mean, two number ones in the world that are basically best friends. You can't get much better than that.
I know.
This is definitely going to be a pod that I go back and listen to probably once a month at this point. I mean,
could be tough to beat this one guest wise.
Exactly. I mean, you can't ever soak in enough information learning from the best players in the world. So
yeah, it was fun.
Just incredible to talk to them. And I'm sure you all enjoyed it as much as we did. But until next time on another golf podcast presented by Bridgestone.
Another Golf Podcast is presented by Bridgestone's new line of Tour B golf balls with a Reactive IQ cover. Reactive IQ is a smart cover technology that reacts to the force of impact. It rebounds quickly on tee shots, delivering explosive velocity and increased distance. And around the green, the Reactive IQ cover stays on the face longer, providing more spin and control. Bridgestone Golf is the pioneer and industry leader in ball fitting, and the four new models of Tour B are designed to ensure every golfer is playing the right ball for their game. The Tour BX and XS models are ideal for players with driver swing speeds over 105 miles per hour, and the RX and RXS were created for golfers with driver swing speeds under 105 miles per hour. To find the right ball for your game, go to BridgestoneGolf.com and click Find My Ball to go through the online ball selector guide. Bridgestone Golf, the number one ball fitter in golf.